League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
People say I am the best boss.
You can find us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio and call in at 1-800-777-2907. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson. Ain't no mountain
high enough. Oh my gosh, we're back for another Monday night, and I get to be with the Gloss.
How about it? On a really good day if you're from Houston.
Well, a big day. Astros win the series over the Red Sox.
Oh, my gosh. Going to the LCS for the first time since 2005.
Well, it'll be fun to break that down. We are based in Houston. Astros with a big win over the Red Sox, and they will advance to face maybe the Indians. But the Yankees are sure putting up a fight. Cleveland leads that series 2-1, and this game is underway as we speak.
Can't wait. I love October.
Love October.
I got to ask, you guys are both Houston fans. I mean, you've got to be rooting for the Yankees, right? So that way it's one more game for either one of these teams and a little bit more work, and you get a little bit more rest. You get to set your rotation. I mean, obviously, you have to be rooting for the Yankees, don't you, being a Houston fan?
No doubt. I think it'd be great if that series would go for five. Now, I'll never root for the Yankees.
I was just going to say, that is just some vernacular that is never, ever in my
conversation. It's hard to come out of that mouth.
But, you know, in baseball, do you want rest? I don't know.
Well, we'll see. But we sure would like to see those Yankees extend their pitchers, get beat up. How about some long extra inning games where they wear everybody out? And
they have to go through six or seven in their pitching lineup. That would be nice.
And then the Indians win and come to face Houston. It'll be a fun matchup. Also a big matchup tonight, Monday Night Football, including
the unveiling.
The Bears. We've got Chris Tubbs, the world's biggest Vikings fan. He's lighting a candle right now. Ever hopeful Sam Bradford will start a new winning streak for the Vikings.
You realize between Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Bradford, we have a quarterback with exactly one good knee?
Well,
that's a sad stat, but it is the unveiling tonight of Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, there's a lot of anticipation. I know there are a lot of people from Chicago around here. They're really excited. I mean, they really want to see what this kid can do. And, hey, he's got a running game behind him, so let's see what he can do tonight on Monday night.
They were not excited in April when they went number two and grabbed Trubisky at up at the top at number two. So,
well, with Watson looking so good, Trubisky's going to need to do something, or else the Bears will feel like they really picked the wrong quarterback. They traded up heavily to get him. We'll look at all those things when we come back. You are listening to The Boss and the Gloss. It's David and Carla on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Listening to Poppin'. I did not know that song. Thank you, Chris Tubbs, for the music intro.
I think the kids call it Poppin'.
Poppin'.
There's no G.
Oh, I'm trying to enunciate well here.
I know. The one time you don't want to enunciate, right?
Right.
I'll catch up.
Well, that's okay. I call Lil B, the rapper, Little B. And my girls definitely correct me. It's Lil B.
Lil B.
Lil with a comma. Yeah.
Well, I'm with LaGloss, Carla Dawson. And we are sitting in Houston, Texas, where the Astros have just advanced with a series win over the Red Sox.
Ooh, a nail-biter.
Well, you know, the interesting thing was, look, if you had said at the beginning of the series, if you'd said this to any Astros fan, would you be happy with this outcome? I mean, they lost one game. No problem, right? But today was a nail-biter.
It was a nail-biter. 5-4 win, and really was put away by the veterans that Houston brought in, which I really want to give a shout out to owner Jim Crane and general manager Jeff Lunau. Crane giving Lunau the leash to do what he did, which at the start of this season brings in Carlos Beltran on a 1-year, $16 million deal. He's 40. Josh Reddick, veteran out of Oakland, and Brian McCann, the veteran catcher from New York. And these guys do so much more than their on-field production, because we've got this so much young talent with Correa, with Altuve, with George Springer, with all these young guys. And the leadership from this group of veterans, and they were the ones that made the difference in the game today.
So about 2-3 years ago, I guess it was, Jim Crane was up here, and he made the rounds. We interviewed him, and he came down to my office, and we were talking to him about the fact that the Astros' payroll was the lowest in MLB. And I don't remember what the number was exactly at that time.
He was in the late 20s.
It was really low. Yes. And he said, look, I could go spend another $12 to $15 million, maybe another $20 million on our payroll, but it wouldn't make a difference. It might be the difference between winning 8 to 15 more games, but we wouldn't be going to the playoffs anyway. He said, there's no reason to spend that money now. I'm going to save my money for the moment when it matters. And when Lunau made the trade for Verlander, that's when Crane backed up his promise, because Verlander's a very, very pricey guy, and he changed the dynamic of the team.
And he was a different second half, you know, post All-Star pitcher than he was the first half. So maybe we were even able to get him, you know, at a better place, definitely in his career. But yes, you're exactly right, because when they missed the first trade deadline, virtually doing nothing, the team was incredibly vocal, especially Dallas Keuchel, who is the one wearing the largest target as your number one guy and former Cy Young Award winner. And Keuchel didn't pitch well, if you remember that month between when he came back from injury. And as soon as they signed Verlander, everybody started clicking. It just helps to spread the wealth, and you're right. Jim Crane put his money where his mouth was, and it's made a huge difference. Now, I'm not sure I want to see Verlander in relief again, but that was a tricky little move by A.J. Hinch today, and the boys got him out of that one nicely.
Well, there it was, the series at the moment, at that time, 2-1, and potential game five looming. I really thought that both Sale and Verlander would be kept for a game five, but maybe in the Andrew Miller era, an era where people like to bring in high quality pitchers earlier in the games, particularly in the playoffs, that might have been the sort of laid the groundwork for bringing in both Sale and Verlander this early in the game and in game four, not a game five.
And I think we see too that the Verlander move looked like a response to what Farrell had done by bringing Sale in. In the middle. So it worked out okay. I mean, Verlander did give up a 2-run home run to Andrew Benintendi, which was a little tense. But, you know, Carlos Beltran, Josh Reddick, those veterans got the guys through. It was really a great win today.
Well, we have standing by on the phone calling in wanting to talk a little Astros baseball is Jeff from Waxahachie. Jeff, welcome into the show.
Good evening. How y'all doing?
We're doing great.
Better today, for sure.
You're an Astros fan, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I grew up down in that area. I'm aging myself. I've been a fan since they were the 45s. And, I mean, I was alive when they were the 45s and going to the stadium. So I've been around for a couple of years.
Wow, the Colt 45s. I love it.
Yeah, it was a good game today. A little hard on his old heart.
It was.
I really wasn't worried. I knew they'd come back to Houston, they'd be okay. But, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. I love Beltran. I mean, I really do. But today, for some reason, I said, why are they putting him in, you know, when they put him in? And, you know, so there I go for trying to beat, you know, A.J. Hinch. You know, he knew what he was doing.
Were you surprised they put Verlander in relief?
I was, in a way. You know, especially if he was going to go, you know, another game. Cause, you know, LCS is going to start on Friday. And I was like, okay, now what are we going to do here now? You know, it's going to jack up the rotation. But all in all, I mean, I'm very happy with their performance yesterday. I don't even know what that was yesterday. I mean, I got home from church, and I was the happiest man in the world at the first inning, you know. And it just, everything
fell
apart.
Well, I think they pulled Peacock too soon. I mean, I think the difference that you saw is in games one and two, Verlander and Keuchel both struggled in early on, like in the second innings or so. But as veterans, they were able to kind of pitch through it and stayed in for a pretty lengthy start. Yesterday, I was worried about that with Peacock, and I thought, you know, there's a couple base-loaded opportunities early on, and they just had enough when they pulled him. But I don't like pulling a starter that early. That did not work well for the Red Sox in games one and two, and unfortunately, it backfired on us the same.
That's true. About the only negative thing I really have to say about today, all in all, is it's nothing major, but at least thank goodness they went to play it up in Boston again this year. but in the ninth inning, that inside the park.
Oh, that was crazy.
Where was Reddick at? You know, he
to back up Springer.
He knows the backup Springer. He did it yesterday.
Yep, he did.
You know? Well, and you know, I've got to go back to the pitcher on that one. Giles, his calling card is his speed. Don't pitch that position to that batter. Are you kidding me? But you know what? It all worked out good, and we can. But just so you know, Jeff, I could see my heart beating through my shirt this afternoon. I thought, I am going to die if this game doesn't end soon.
And so, hey, I have one more comment. I'll let you guys go. Thanks for all your time. Y'all been great. But the only thing that's worrying me, if they do play the Indians, is the pitching matchups. That's the only thing that kind of worries me. Is if it's going to be the Astros and the Indians. I kind of, after the first two for Houston, I'm not feeling too good. I don't know how y'all feel about that.
Yeah, duly noted. The one heartening thing for the Astros is that Kluber can be hit. I mean, he was not good in game two, and that was a surprise to me. Terry Francona with the bold move to hold Kluber back to game two, and then Kluber didn't even pitch that well. So, and Kluber's been so flawless down the stretch that I would have thought he was the one unhittable guy. And so, you know, these series are hard to predict. I mean, over 162 game series season, you might have one outcome, but these are short series, and I think the Astros are well positioned.
I love the short series, and I think, too, you see with the pitching lineups that, you know, you've got Verlander, who had having his 17th postseason start for Game 1, versus Sale, who had never had a postseason start. And, boy, the experience on that mound was the difference, clearly. So we'll see. I mean, there is some weakness in Cleveland. I'm glad we got to see a little bit of that. But they do have the experience of being pushed to a Game 7 last year in the World Series. So, you know, we just have to keep plugging for our boys, and let's hope it keeps going our way.
Well, thanks for joining us, Jeff. So, Carla, we had the privilege of going to Game 1 here in Houston, and Altuve was awesome. Three home runs. There aren't a lot of guys in history who had three home runs in a playoff series. It was a neat display of Altuve and who he is to a world who really hasn't been following Astros baseball. On the biggest stage, he really stepped up and did well.
He did. His batting average after game one was 750. How fine is that? Have you ever even seen a 750 batting average?
No, that's very impressive.
And he joins a short list of like nine other players who have had three home runs in the postseason.
Yeah, and it's an elite group. Each one of those names is somebody special. And it sure cements the notion that he should be the MVP of the American League.
Yeah, we have to say the names because they are really great. You're right. Pablo Sandoval, Albert Pujols, of course, Adrian Beltre, Adam Kinney, George Brett, Reggie Jackson, my own Oakland A's. I've always got to plug those boys in Oakland. Babe Ruth, two times. How about that?
That's an elite group.
That is a
and
great
Jose
group
Altuve.
All 5 foot six of him.
5 feet six. And look, actually, when you consider most of those names, those are big bodied players. I mean, certainly the Panda is a big body player. Pablo Sandoval is a big one. But Altuve is different from all the rest. There he is, an infielder with a tiny little body, and he's pounding the ball out of the park.
Smallest player in Major League Baseball.
Impressive.
Only in stature, not in presence.
Well, as we speak, the Yankees have extended their lead. They're up 4-0 over Cleveland. And this is a series that I think everybody thought Cleveland would handle very efficiently.
Either 3-0.
They were up 2-0 in the series, and now the Yankees seek to tie the series 2-2.
It's going to be tricky. So keep an eye on this one tonight for sure. But it really does come down to pitching. I mean, it really does. So we'll see what's happening.
And then later tonight, the Dodgers will be looking for a sweep. They think they've got if the Dodgers sweep tonight, they'll be able to line up all their pitching, and they're certainly in a great spot coming into the next round.
And great matchup tonight. You've got Yu Darvish taking the mound for the Dodgers, former Texas Rangers, against Zach Greinke, their number one guy for the Diamondbacks.
Great matchup. Two great pitchers. Darvish, of course, a trade deadline pickup for the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Just when you thought the Dodgers had everything they needed, they went out and got another pitcher to add to that pretty strong rotation.
Mm-hmm. But he's tricky. You never know which Darvish is going to show up. So let's see.
Greinke is a guy I'd love to have on the mound for me.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, he was with the Dodgers. They had Kershaw and Greinke all together. Good gosh.
Yes, a bit of a reunion there.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be exciting. So the Dodgers lead that series 2-0. We'll see what happens tonight if they can close it out.
And as for the Red Sox, whose season is done, we'll be talking later with Steve Lyons, Psycho, who played for the Red Sox, amongst other teams. He's also now a baseball analyst for NESN, and we'll be talking to him next hour about what happened to the Red Sox and what moves they can make in the offseason to position for next year.
And the Cubs just went up 2-1 against the Nationals tonight, so that's a series now, too.
Great MLB action. When we come back, we're going to talk to Brian Baldinger, NFL analyst. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Now, this is a segment I'm looking forward to, Carla. We are joined now by Brian Baldinger. He is a former NFL player. He also is an analyst for the NFL Network. Brian, welcome into the show.
David, Carla, it's good to be with you tonight. How you doing?
Well, we're doing great. We understand we have interrupted you from watching tape. There's this perception we have that there you are in the dark hours in a dark room watching tape. You're sort of a football nerd.
Yes, that's exactly what I am. But nerd being like Revenge of the Nerds, like it's given me power. I feel like I really know what's going on after you sit here and digest this. And, you know, the game, be honest with you, Dave, the game just moves too fast and it's too complex to see in real time. Mm-hmm. You have to slow it down and go back and watch it to see the great individual plays, to see the scheme, to see where guys messed up, to kind of really see what happened in the game. And so I get a chance to do that Mondays and Tuesdays here.
Or maybe you're looking at tape because there's some offensive lines that need you this season. You might have to suit up again. Are you ready?
It's awful, Carla. It's awful.
Brian. I actually want to ask you about that.
Everywhere I go, people are talking about it. I was talking to Tom Moore yesterday. I did the Arizona-Philadelphia Eagle game. Tom Moore was coaching in the NFL in 1960. You know, he's been around, you know, Peyton Manning and some of the Chuck Knoll and Terry Bradshaw. And we were talking about just if you don't fix your offensive line by the time you get to September right now, it's almost impossible to do any good thing right now offensively. I mean, and all these teams, Russell Wilson rescues his team every week, but they're terrible up front in Seattle. And that's the state of the league right now.
And is that state, Brian, do you think that is from they're not coaching them right in college, or it's just not a sexy pick when you're drafting? What is the fall off in offensive line production?
It's really, you know, it's the safety measures that have been implemented by all levels of football. And so the college game, very little hitting, very little contact, so the players aren't really very, outside of some elite athletes that come out, they're not really very schooled very well. The offenses in college are so much different than the NFL, and the NFL can only take what the college game gives them. And then they get to the NFL, and they're restricted by, you know, how much contact they can have and how they can practice. And so these guys are getting to the NFL level, and you think they're pro players, but they're really not. They're really not very skilled, and they don't really have the proper fundamentals. And you have two choices right now. You could overpay for free agents the way that the Raiders have, although they're not playing very well right now, or you could draft at the top of the draft for a few years in a row like the Cowboys did, and you can find linemen there, or you could be the Eagles and draft Lane Johnson and pay a great deal of money for Jason Peters and invest in your offensive line. And you know, and that's what you have to do. You have to overpay and overinvest to try to get good players and a lot of depth at that position right now.
We're talking to Brian Baldinger, NFL Network. So, Brian, you mentioned the Eagles. You played for the Eagles. Thus far, they look like one of the top teams in the NFC. Are they as good as they've looked?
Well, you know, they're 4-1, so the record says that they're good. And they have played, they played their best game in over a year yesterday against the Cardinals. But, you know, they need a 61-yard field goal to beat the Giants. And, you know, they got a kicker that had four really good kicks against San Diego out in San Diego last week to win by two. So they've been in close games, but they're winning the close games right now. They have a lot of good things going. The quarterback is sensational.
He is sensational.
He's a great young talent. He's a great kid. We're going to be talking about him at the top of the quarterback charts for a long time to come. He's only played 21 games in the NFL, and yesterday was the best game he's played, and he just keeps getting better. And every time he steps on the field, it gives the Eagles a chance to win.
So true. He really brings a unique confidence, and that team needs him. So there are a couple two and three teams that are right on the cusp. Which of these, that would be the Raiders, your old boys, the Cowboys, or the Texans, have the most to overcome in order to turn around their season?
Well, of those three teams, the only team that is forced to play with a backup quarterback at least for a little while longer is the Oakland Raiders. And I think any time you're asking E.J. Manuel to go in there and to win games for you, I think it's going to be tough. So I would say that, you know, Houston right now, Deshaun Watson has been sensational. I think Dallas can still they just left too much time on the clock for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, they're still a good football team. The thing that I like about Dallas is, look, nobody wants to get beat by Aaron Rodgers in the last minute and 13 seconds. But
again,
Jordan,
9 months later, you know.
Well, you know, if you look at this team, Jordan Lewis and Xavier Woods and, you know, all these young guys that are starting, these rookies that are playing for them, I mean, they're not going to be rookies 2 months from now. They're going to be, you know, tutored by a really good coach in Rod Marinelli. They're going to grow up. And if they grow up the right way, Dallas, when you get to November and December, I think they're going to be a much better defense than what they're showing right now.
We're talking to Brian Baldinger of the NFL Network. So, Brian, sticking in the NFC East, the Giants' season just couldn't have started off any worse, and then the injury yesterday to OBJ. Are they done this year, and what happened?
Well, they were poorly constructed. You know, I mean, they just never addressed the offensive line, and the offensive line was the issue last year. The running game was the issue last year. They didn't go after running backs. They didn't draft them. They didn't really upgrade the offensive line. And so they were left with no running game and a poorly constructed offensive line, albeit they've had injuries. They've had to shuffle the deck a few times. That's never easy, but they didn't really have enough quality depth there. It was a slippery slope. And I don't ever want to say a team is done. Mathematically, they're still alive. So I've seen the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they were 1-5 2 years ago, and they won out. They didn't lose another game. They beat Pittsburgh to get to maybe 2-5 early in the year, and they won out, and they got to the playoffs. So I'm not going to say they're done, but they sure look like it. And defensively, that was a real strength of the team last year, and they don't look like the same guys playing defense, although they're the same names in the back of the jersey right now. Outside of Olivier Vernon, it's the same group,
yep.
And they played terribly yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with you. And losing four receivers in one day is pretty tough. I will say that's going to be hard to recover from. Looking over at the Pittsburgh Steelers, wow. What was going on with Big Ben yesterday? A career-high 5 interceptions, including 2 pick sixes. And, you know, afterwards he said, hey, maybe I don't have it anymore. Has he really lost his confidence? Was it sarcastic? And what do you think is going on with Big Ben?
I think it was a little bit in jest. Look, quarterbacks have bad days. They don't typically happen against, you know, Jacksonville and at home, but they do have bad days. And I think part of Ben was just saying, I'm analyzing this the way anybody's analyzing this. It could go either way, but I'm kind of saying they're going to come out of this thing, and he's going to be a part of it. And then, you know, you all can say that I'm done, and just remember this day. His way of saying, the way Aaron Rodgers was telling people to relax, it's his way of saying we're going to come back from this. And, you know, it's not R-E-A-L-X the way Aaron Rodgers spelled it out. It's, you know, maybe I'm done. I don't believe he really is thinking that. They can come back from this. They have a tremendous talent in offense. They haven't played well. They haven't put it all together. But it's the same offense that was in the AFC Championship game a year ago. And they added Martavis Bryant to the offense. So I think they can still come out of it. It's still a lot of time left. But that was a disappointing loss to a talented Jacksonville defense yesterday.
Okay, is Jacksonville the real deal? I mean, I cannot get – it's so hard for me to believe that they are. But, wow, they are taking care of people every week.
Well, the quarterback is a real question mark, Carla.
Blake Bortles,
they're going to have a hard time. I mean, he was not good yesterday. Leonard Fournette was. The defense was great. The defense scored 2 touchdowns yesterday. Mm-hmm. They scored 2 touchdowns week 1 against Houston to win the game. So it's 2 of their 3 wins. Their defense has scored 4 touchdowns. They've outscored the offense. So can you do that against good teams? Now, you know, Pittsburgh, you could say, is a good team, but I saw Pittsburgh get squashed week 3 by Philadelphia last year, and they went to the AFC Championship game. I've seen that team come back from it. But I hesitate to say that Jacksonville is a great team because I haven't seen the quarterback play consistent football enough. And you can't hide your quarterback in this league. It's great when the defense scores 14 points like that, but you can't count on that every week.
Brian Baldinger, NFL Network, thank you so much for joining us. In 15 seconds, stack rank the three quarterbacks of last year's draft, Wentz, Goff, and Prescott.
Well, I'll just say Carson Wentz, and it's no slight on Dak and the development of Jared Goff. But Jared Goff with Sean McVay is a good combination.
Right.
I love Dak, but Carson Wentz, I think, is going to be special amongst all special.
All right, you heard it from Brian Baldinger. Thanks so much for joining us on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Tonight, with Monday Night Football underway, it's the Bears and the Vikings, and we have a man on the ground, Tom Okemah. Tom, welcome into the show.
Thanks, David. Right now here at Soldier Field, the Mitchell Trubisky era is underway. The Bears were marching down the field looking very, very good until a offensive holding penalty from Cody Whitehair stymied the drive and forced the Bears to punt. Vikings have the ball now on their 12-yard line with just over 10 minutes left to go in the first.
That's Tom Okemah. Thanks so much, Tom. Interestingly, the Vikings get Sam Bradford back. The Bears bring on their much-heralded Mitch Trubisky. I mean, he's the number one, well, he's their first-round pick. He is
he's number two overall pick.
Yes, number two overall pick. They traded up to get him. A lot of fanfare for him. He's the first quarterback off the board, taken ahead of Deshaun Watson. Trubisky needs to show well.
He needs to show well, and he is the first rookie to start a Monday Night Football game since 1999. A little more pressure than he probably already has under the bright lights of Monday Night Football. But what's interesting to me is how Chicago was so upset when they drafted him at number two. They did not want him. What is tricky about that, and I can understand that as a Chicago fan, now things have turned around. He's had a nice preseason, and they so badly need a change after Mike Glennon. Is that just his body of work? There's just not much. Like, he graduated from Mentor High School. So any article that you look up, his high school coach really talks a lot about him because you only have 13 starts at UNC to take a look at. I don't know if any of that matters, but as far as body of work goes, it's pretty limited.
But 13 starts in college, and then at that program, UNC, it's not like Alabama or Clemson or Auburn or any of the big programs.
No, that's right. It's not atop the ACC. They have come a long way. But, you know, I've mentioned this before, and I know you've heard it, David, but the last time that I saw Mitchell Trubisky play, he was Mitch. That's the first thing. But nonetheless, before the draft, was a loss to a so-so Stanford team in the Sun Bowl in El Paso, Texas, with Stanford's second-string quarterback. So it didn't give me a lot of faith, and as a Chicago Bears fan, I would have been upset too, you know, trading up to take him at number two. However, this is a different day, a different time. I'm not throwing him under the bus. History is what I know about, and can't wait to see what he can do tonight. I hope the best for him. I really do.
Well, all I can tell you is the one pass I've seen him throw, as we have a TV here on in the studio, was a pretty good throw. He was on the move, and he put the ball right on the money. So
I think he's a confident guy, and, you know, that's half the battle.
Well, speaking of confident guys, Deshaun Watson and the Texans. Watson has performed well. The Texans fell yesterday to the Chiefs. Credit the Chiefs. I mean, they're a pretty strong team.
Oh, my God.
Maybe the best in the NFL right now.
They are the only undefeated team in the NFL. They really are playing fantastic complimentary football. They've gotten surprises from rookie Kareem Hunt out of Toledo. Who would think this guy would be just killing it with over 200 yards a game? However, the Texans' defense, their very depleted defense, did hold him to 107 yards last night on 29 carries.
So it's a victory to hold Kareem Hunt to 107 yards.
It really is.
Interestingly, though, Alex Smith has long been called sort of a game manager, a guy who had a low ceiling, and he has really played well this year. He looks like a guy who has taken his game to a whole other level.
You know, his 13 years in the league for Smith, and the past several years, his pass average has been about 5 to 7 yards. It's now 11 in 2017. He's got some confidence, and I love to call it the Mahomes effect. I mean, you're there as a 13-year veteran, and your team picks up Patrick Mahomes in the first round, the quarterback out of Texas Tech, the air raid offense, and you're thinking, what? But you know what? It's been a positive kind of nipping on the heels thing for him. Alex Smith is money. I mean, last night, 29 of 37 for 325 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Outstanding.
Outstanding. Good for him. to stick it in there for 13 years and you're finally starting to have this breakout season is pretty wonderful.
Well, and so they are the only undefeated team. Eventually, they're going to lose, right? I mean, they've got a couple tough games coming up. It's hard, and they're playing in a what seemed to be a pretty tough AFC West.
Yeah, now, the Raiders, Murderers Row. That's a tough.
The Raiders
tough
have taken
division.
A step back, and Carr's health is obviously a big question mark. But the Broncos
Denver, yeah.
are outstanding. And I think the Chargers are better than their record.
Yes, they have. They did
and they got a win yesterday.
They got a win yesterday, exactly. So they are out of the 0-4 column, which is great. You know, I think in the game last night, Sunday Night Football game, on the brightest lights, Deshaun Watson continues to impress. 5 TD passes last night. 3 to Fuller, or 3 to DeAndre Hopkins, 2 to Fuller. What a game. And after you lose 2 of your very important cogs in your defensive line on the first drive of the game in J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. Tough, tough, tough season-ending losses for the Texans.
Well, here we are about a month into the NFL season, and if you'd gone to any Texans fan before the start of the season and said, you might lose J.J. Watt, you know, he didn't play at all last year, but you will get a great quarterback. That would be a heck of a trade. J.J. Watt, one of the best players ever at the defensive position. He is sort of the heart and soul of that team, or certainly the most visible guy on the Texans team. He's done so
and
much for our
community.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just been tremendous with the Hurricane Relief Fund. But getting a quarterback for the Texans was tantamount. And you could probably get away with a mediocre defensive end, but you're never going anywhere with a mediocre quarterback.
No, never. And J.J. Watt is not mediocre. I know that's not what you're saying, but you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, so easy to want to hang your head low and think the season is over. But let's not forget the Texans put 34 points on the undefeated Kansas City Chiefs last night. And, you know, some of it came late. It doesn't matter. It came. And they still played and they still continued. And I think, you know, it's going to be a big loss. It's going to be a big loss for the city. I just hope, you know, J.J. Watt's had a groin surgery, 2 back surgeries, and now a knee surgery. Do you think he's coming back?
I think he's coming back, but it's interesting. I've read reports. Barry Warner was on writing on sportsmap.com in Houston that he thinks he'll be back, but he'll never quite be the same. I mean, one thing about Watt is you know that he will lay it out. He will work his tail off. He will do everything possible to get back to 100%. But there is a cumulative impact mm-hmm. of a lot of injuries, and he's had some significant ones now.
And close together.
And it's hard to come back and be the player he once was. To be at that level of dominance at an older
NFL
age.
NFL Player of the Year.
It's very, yeah. very hard.
More than once, yeah. No, absolutely. But, you know, this is a chance, like Jadeveon Clowney last year, took this challenge and rose. I mean, he with Watt out, he was unstoppable, really came out of his shell and became the first-round player that we have always wanted him to be. I think he will continue on that path. It's just going to be more now on the shoulders of the guys that are there. DJ Reader, our Clemson nose tackle, Bernardrick McKinney. You know, these guys are really going to have to step up. And I think they've got the heart, they've got the soul, and they've got a heartbeat on the offense for the first time in franchise history. So let's hope.
That they do. Now, another team that moved the ball well, particularly in the last minute, it was the Green Bay Packers. Woo! Aaron Rodgers did it again. Was he impressive?
He was so impressive. He's getting better every week.
It just seemed inevitable that he was going to take them down the field.
It really was. And, you know, for the Dallas fans, I thought, oh, gosh, this is a short memory from the playoffs that was just 9 months ago. You know, Green Bay scored this touchdown yesterday with 11 seconds on the clock. You just can't give the Tom Brady's of the world, clearly the Aaron Rodgers of the world, you can't give them that kind of time, which is a minute or two, I might add, but that's what elite quarterbacks do.
Okay, when the Cowboys were driving down, they did the read option. Prescott pulled it. He was running for the end zone. Knowing what you know, well, let's say we're in the same situation, Cowboys, Packers, and the Cowboys are in the same spot. Would you coach Prescott to take a knee at the half-yard line, go down so that more time could run off the clock with the bet that a play or two later you could then punch it over, get the touchdown, and not allow Rodgers the time to come back?
I'm going to say yes, because I watched the Texans almost beat the Patriots in week 3, and seeing the time on the clock that was left for Brady, about 2 minutes, and knowing the elite quarterback that he is, I would say yes, because as a Cowboys fan, you look at what happened 9 months ago and what Aaron Rodgers did. And I don't want to see that again. So, yes, I would tell Dak to take a knee. And I trust him. I would trust the ball in Dak's hands to make that happen.
Well, it was almost predictable this was coming. And Prescott could have done that. Now, every instinct as a player is to go in for the touchdown. And surely he was not coached to stop. But he might be coached the next time around, particularly when the Dallas defense has been a weak link. They're getting some pass rush out of DeMarcus Lawrence, which has been helpful. David Irving came back off of his suspension. He was in the backfield a great deal. But would you rather bet against Aaron Rodgers in the offense or the Dallas defense that has trouble getting pressure on the quarterback?
Yeah, that's a tough call. It is. I think what I really see with Dallas in the last 2 weeks against the Rams last week, then Green Bay yesterday, big lead equals big problem for Dallas. I mean, they were up 21-6 on Green Bay yesterday. This, you know, wow.
Well, credit Dak Prescott. He played a great game, actually. Rodgers and Prescott were both outstanding in different ways. The one thing I'd say about Prescott is in the first half, the Cowboys really didn't run the ball very well, but Prescott was able to use his feet, buy some time, and make some big throws down the field. The only thing that really went wrong for the Cowboys offense was the pick six, but really you have to put that on the hands of Terrence Williams, as Prescott put the ball in the right place. Williams tipped the ball, and it led to the pick six and really swung the momentum in the Packers' favor.
Well, and you look for Green Bay, too. Not only is it Aaron Rodgers, but you've got a third-string running back in Aaron Jones who has stepped in for Ty Montgomery and another second one on the depth chart. I can't remember the name right now. 19 carries, 125 yards, and a touchdown as a third-string running back. I mean, those are things you don't actually account for, and that's a great surprise for Green Bay.
Well, and that may say two things. The Cowboys' pass or rushing defense has not been good. Gurley beat him up the week before with the Rams. Mm-hmm. But Jones did look the part. He really ran well. He caught the ball out of the backfield well. And frankly, he looks a lot more like a running back than Ty Montgomery, who looks a bit like a receiver who's been moved to running back.
Well,
which
that is what
case.
Happened. Yeah, yes. College receiver at Stanford moved to running back, exactly.
So it just feels like Jones, maybe the better fit ultimately for that Packers offense, is Jones in the backfield. You can move Montgomery back to his natural slot.
Well, and how about Devontae Adams' performance? 10 days after that brutal hit from the Bears' Danny Trevathan, and he has two touchdowns yesterday, including the game winner. He was ridiculous.
Well, the game winner is interesting. If you heard his comments after the game, he said that he went back to the huddle and he said, Rodgers, give it to me. I got my guy. I'm going to make this happen. And he was manned up against Jordan Lewis. Mm-hmm. Now, Jordan Lewis is a third round draft pick. He's a cornerback for the Cowboys who everyone's pretty high on. He's a rookie, but what a tough spot. They had a man to man on Adams, and look, he was stride for stride there. It's not like it was bad coverage.
It wasn't bad coverage. You're exactly
right. He bit poorly. But that combination of Rodgers to Adams, the ability for Rodgers to put the ball in just the right spot where Adams could maneuver to catch it. I mean, Lewis almost didn't have a chance.
Well, and the ability for Aaron Rodgers to run 18 yards to make that catch happen is...
Well, yes, to get the first down. Crucial third and long. And
I'm not used to seeing Aaron Rodgers run down the field like that.
David Irving got paws on him. If he could have brought him down at that moment, then that would have been fourth down. The Packers would have been scrambling to get on the field and try to kick the game tying at that point field goal. Mm-hmm. So it was just a game of near misses. But obviously, Aaron has done it again.
He has done it again.
Now, we've got just a minute, but I would love to hear your thoughts on Jared Goff and the Rams facing the Seahawks. They almost pulled it out. Goff has really stepped up his game and has played well for the Rams in the last few weeks.
Well, and it was the Seattle defense, honestly, rather than Jared Goff falling off. I mean, he had two interceptions yesterday and a fumble. He's had one interception in his first four games. He's very well coached by Sean McVay. The Seattle defense was once again the story. The Seattle offensive line is once again the bugaboo. And if it's not for Russell Wilson scrambling all over the place, and he even had three sacks while scrambling, they've got some problems in Seattle. They were lucky to squeak that one out.
So Seattle does squeak out the victory over the Rams. Goff had a pass in the end zone that was dropped and just might have been the game winner for the Rams. So they almost win again. When we come back, we'll wrap up this first hour, and we'll take a look at some college football, a big weekend that we just experienced. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss, David and Carla on SB Nation Radio.
The Boss and the Gloss continues now on SB Nation Radio with David Gao and Carla Dawson.
We covered a lot of ground in that first hour. It was fun to talk to Brian Baldinger. He had many insights, but it was interesting when I asked him to stack rank the three quarterbacks of last year's draft, Goff, Wentz, and Prescott. Of those three, he only could say that Wentz was at the top of the list.
Well, he is he's a former Eagles player, so we're going to give him that. And I'm all about favoritism. I have no problem.
But he's
no
a former Cowboys player, too.
Well, very true.
Look, all three of those guys are showing well right now. I mean, Goff was the guy you would have put at the back of the list, but now he's really emerged this year. He's doing much better.
Which I think that is a great experiment in getting the right coach. Mm-hmm. You know, Jeff Fisher, great guy, defensive-minded coach. I mean, Goff was a disaster under Jeff Fisher. You bring in Sean McVay, offensive coordinator, who's developed several good quarterbacks and Kirk Cousins and things. And wow, we have a totally different player. Having a better quarterback also opens up the running game. Look at Todd Gurley's season this year. So coaching really matters. It really matters.
Another thing we learned in this first hour is that there's a new man in your club. I mean, everybody wants to be in the Carla Dawson club, right? We got a new man, Jose Altuve. Though he may be shorter than you.
He's not.
Really? With those heels on, you're taller, I guess.
That's why I wear heels.
My goodness.
I have tall daughters. I'm tired of being the littlest one. So, heels it is.
Really?
So, yes, but bare feet, Jose and I are eye to eye.
Okay, well, those heels give you a couple of inches. So, you're going out with Jose, and you've got height on him, and you actually make a lovely couple.
But he's a big presence. He grows in presence, for sure. I'm old school. I'm Oakland A's 72, 73, 74 champs. I love Jose. He's got that same style.
Yeah, they won the championship, the A's did, the year you were born. And
you are the best boss.
Carla adds Jose Altuve, her vote for the MVP, to her list of man friends.
The growing list of man friends.
More boys. How many boys can you have, Carla?
You know, it's infinity and beyond.
Everybody wants to be on the list. When we come back, we're going to talk some college football. You're listening to David and Carla on SB Nation Radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.